Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history, and surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. But closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is gathered, and what information is stored, and what information that you want to keep, personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for that free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just send an email. Remember, georgegordon.org. Click onto that email machine and send your email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Homeschool, the right stuff. You know, the late Professor Medford Evans, he was the former chief of security training for the Atomic Energy Commission, and he was a Yale PhD. He once said of our government school system, quote, "Never has so much been spent to teach so little to so many. An increasing number of parents disenchanted with the many pitfalls of statist education are turning to non-government alternatives. And though the number of private schools appears to have stabilized over the past decade at about 25,000 schools and 2.5 million students, it is now estimated that homeschooling is surging at an annual rate of 20 to 40% per year, with nearly a million children now learning their ABCs and values from their parents during the school day. This flight from public schools has been accomplished and accompanied by an expanding market for information and resources to enhance the teaching talents of both parents and private school educators." Now, you know, as a first step, it is essential to understand the cause of our present discontents. Education specialist Samuel Blumenfeld, in his important work titled "Is Public Education Necessary?", explains in disturbing detail how and why Americans were enticed to surrender educational freedom for educational statism. Blumenfeld notes that of the 117 men who signed our Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and our Constitution, of that group of 117, only a fourth attended college. George Washington was educated by his father, Benjamin Franklin was educated by his father and by a private school. Thomas Jefferson was educated by tutors. Now, Blumenfeld's NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education, exposes the leftist political activities and radical social policies of the National Education Association and documents the significant contribution which the nation's largest teachers' union has made to illiteracy, crime, sexual promiscuity, drug abuse, and the declining academic performance. Other books written by Blumenfeld focus on solutions to the education debacle, including a book called How to Start Your Own School and Why You Need One, which helped launch the blossoming homeschool movement here in the United States in the early 1980s. The New Illiterates is another book, and a third book, How to Keep Your Child from Becoming One. A detailed guide to systematic phonics instruction on how to tutor, which explains how virtually any parent who can read can adequately teach the three R's. Let me repeat that. Blumenfeld wrote a book called The New Illiterates and How to Keep Your Child from Becoming One. It's a detailed guide to systematic phonics instruction. And he wrote another book, How to Tutor, which explains how virtually any parent, now you got that, any parent who can read. Now, if you're illiterate and can't read, then it leaves you out. But if you're a parent, and if you can read, you can adequately teach your children the three R's. He publishes the Blumenfeld Education Letter, published monthly, and keeps subscribers current on pros and cons of educational trends. And there's legal aid also. The obvious threat which private schools pose to the government system has resulted in many varied attempts by the government to snuff out or to gain control of these home schools. Competent legal assistance for private and home schoolers has therefore been an imperative. The Virginia-based Homeschool Legal Defense Association, we'll call that HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association was founded in 1983 to unite a large number of homeschooling families so that each family could have a source of quality legal assistance at low cost. This nonprofit organization presently has 30,000 families as members, and while most legal threats to its members are resolved amicably out of court, when litigation becomes necessary, the association provides full representation at each stage of the legal proceedings without cost to the family. Now, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association's senior counsel, Christopher Klicka, who has successfully represented over 2,000 homeschool families in legal conflicts, is author of a book called Homeschooling in the United States, a Legal Analysis, which describes in detail the legal atmosphere for homeschooling in each state. It is updated annually. His most recent book, The Right Choice, The Incredible Failure of Public Education and the Rising Hope of Homeschooling, is a comprehensive overview of the benefits and biblical basis of homeschooling, its historical heritage, and its academic success. The Homeschool Legal Defense Association has a or was a plaintiff in a recent case in which the Texas Supreme Court ruled unanimously on June 15, 1994, that a home school enjoys the same legal status as a private school in Texas as long as it has a written curriculum and provides instruction in spelling, grammar, reading, mathematics, and good citizenship. Here are a few other cases from the lengthy list in which the Defense Association has been involved. When two families in North Dakota were tried and convicted for the crime of homeschooling, the Defense Association appealed to the North Dakota Supreme Court, which ruled in favor of the families and reversed their truancy convictions. The Defense Association filed a federal civil rights action on behalf of 9 homeschooling families against sundry school districts in Pennsylvania that had attempted to compel the parents to abide an oppressive tutorial provision of the state's compulsory attendance law. A U.S. District Court judge ruled that the provision was unconstitutionally vague and ambiguous and unenforceable, and as a result, more than 20 court cases against the Defense Association member families were either won by the Defense Association or were dismissed. In February of 1994, the Defense Association was instrumental in triggering massive nationwide opposition to a dangerous amendment that had quietly been slipped into House Resolution 6, the House bill to reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965. The amendment was proposed by liberal Representative George Miller, Democrat of California, and would have effectively required state certification of all teachers, including homeschooling parents. The massive cascade of phone calls, telegrams, and letters persuaded the House to scrap the amendment on February 24th by a startling 424-1 margin. Only Representative Miller stood firm. When approved, 374-53, an amendment offered by conservative Representative Dick Armey of Texas stated that nothing contained in the rest of the act shall be construed to affect home schools. Both votes are shown on pages 66 and 67. Now, Alpha Omega Publications, headquartered in Tempe, Arizona, was established in 1982 by Richard Fugate, who is today its chief executive officer. Fugate, a longtime activist in the Christian school movement. Fugate earlier founded and served as principal of a private school in 1971, disturbed at the extent to which humanism and its attendant evils had permeated the curriculum of the government schools, which their children were attending. Fugate and his wife place the youngsters in Christian schools. By those, Fugate recalls, were not any better. They used public school textbooks with the same kind of stuff in them, United Nations preaching and all of that. So we started teaching our children at home. Alpha Omega supplies textbooks and other materials in the areas of language, the Bible, mathematics, and social science. Fugate explains that they were written by some 200 authors throughout the country, all with at least a master's degree and 5 years of teaching in their fields. At present, the company's texts are not used in government schools, but a recently published mathematics book could help shore up that subject in these status schools if they decided to use it. While the number of private schools has leveled off in recent years, Fugate is encouraged by the substantial growth in committed homeschool families. The response to House Resolution 6, he believes, let the country see in a dramatic way the level of commitment that has been apparent from within the movement for some years now. He estimates that homeschooling is increasing by about 50% a year, but loses perhaps one half of those parents who start up the year before only to find the task too trying. In speeches, he warns parents that if you lack self-discipline and if you lack personal organization and you lack the ability to control your own child, you're probably going to fail. So as the movement continues to grow and mature, the parents become more knowledgeable and proficient at the start, that attrition rate will undoubtedly decline. Now, the inaccuracy of humanist bias of many textbooks used in government schools has been a scandal for decades. In 1961, 16-year-old Jim Gabler asked his dad to scrutinize troubling passages in his high school history textbook. Mel Gabler, too, was disturbed by what he read. From the text's enthusiastic support of constitutionally questionable federal programs to the omission of crucial aspects of U.S. history, the experience led Mel and his wife, Norma, to pursue other textbooks used by their children. They found so many outrageous examples of immorality, obscenity, socialism and anti-Christian, anti-American bias that they decided to register a complaint with the Texas State Board of Education's textbook committee. Initially, they were viewed as mere troublemakers, but as the gabblers delved further into the matter and meticulously documented their case, they have compiled thousands of detailed textbook reviews, which run from a few to as many as 146 pages. Other concerned parents, educators, and the news media began taking them seriously, and as their tenacious influence grew, textbook publishers and the state textbook committee began heeding their pleas for more emphasis on basic academic skills and less space for immorality, profanity, and other objectionable material. Beginning in 1988, the gabblers began concentrating primarily on the factual errors in texts rather than questions of philosophy or ideology. Though they are more concerned about the latter, the fact-focused approach has made it more difficult for the textbook publishers and school officials to avoid making corrections and has tended to convince an increasing number of print and electronic journalists that what they have been claiming all along is in fact true. In the spring of 1991, they revealed a shocking number of factual errors in textbooks slated for state adoption. One Macmillan McGraw-Hill text claimed, for instance, that Sputnik was the first successful intercontinental ballistic missile launched by the Soviet Union, and that it carried a nuclear warhead. Actually, it was a space satellite, sans warhead, and a Scott Forsman and Company text claimed that the Korean War began in 1959 and that the United States easily settled the conflict by using the atomic bomb. In fact, the war, or police action as it was euphemistically termed, began in 1950 and it was settled uneasily after 33,000 American troops were killed and another 103,000 wounded, and the U.S. never nuked the enemy as it was implied in the textbook. In the months after the gabblers began their search, publishers made nearly 8,000 changes in the texts, as reported in the New American for May 18, 1992. On December 16, 1991, the publishers resubmitted the texts along with signed affidavits guaranteeing that the books were error-free. But on January the 9th, the gabblers submitted a list of another 187 factual errors that they and Dr. Neil Frey, a former history professor, had found in the corrected texts. The red-faced publishers made another 1,669 changes and returned with the new error-free versions. This time, the gabblers and Frey found an additional 112 factual errors. Mel Gabler laments that our nation has become exactly what has been taught to our children. 33 years ago, when we started, we predicted the situation now. Not that we were that smart. We just looked at what the children were being taught. And one of the problems he advises is that nearly everybody that fights these problems, whether it is abortion or pornography or socialism, whatever the subject is, they generally, if you even mention education, put it as one of the spokes on a wheel. Well, actually, education is the hub because your ACLU-type lawyers and your left-wing politicians, all of those, they're victims of their own education. Now, one of the most comprehensive sources of information about homeschooling has been the Big Book series by Mary Pride, which, beginning in 1986 with publication of the Big Book of Home Learning, the complete guide to everything educational for you and your children, has cataloged and evaluated various homeschool curricula, textbooks, records, cassette tapes, children's magazines, foreign language courses, games, maps, laboratory equipment, computer programs, charts, tests, tools, flashcards, models, and on it goes. Mrs. Pride also addresses the key issues correlated with educational decline, from Keynesian economics and feminist propaganda to secular humanism and look-say reading. There are 4 volumes in the Big Book series, and they will soon be bundled with a CD-ROM as a single basic book, accompanied by a computer storehouse of the additional information. Mrs. Pride, who holds a Bachelor of Science degree in electrical engineering and a master's degree in computer science, is heavily involved in the effort to bring homeschooling into the high-tech age. She has written Pride's Guide to Education Software, which reviews some 750 educational computer programs for homeschoolers and is developing plans to launch her own bulletin board system. Her new magazine, Practical Homeschooling, includes a high-tech section which she speculates will eventually spin off into a magazine all its own. Now, the Reverend Paul Lindstrom operates what may be the nation's largest combined private and homeschool program. He has been an activist in commendable causes for decades, first achieving national prominence in the late 1960s after North Korea captured the USS Pueblo in January of 1968. He founded the Remember the Pueblo Committee to assure that Commander Lloyd M. Butcher and his crew were not flushed down the memory hole, as has so often happened with Americans held captive by the communists. Commander Booker and his crew were released in December of 1968. There are presently some 600 students enrolled at Reverend Lindstrom's Christian Liberty Academy in Prospect Heights, Illinois. The school-affiliated Christian Liberty Press publishes about 100 titles for use in the curricula, but also utilizes material from other Christian-oriented outlets, such as Alpha Omega and Bob Jones University Press. Now, the off-campus CLA satellite schools, CLASS, have some 30,000 enrollees from kindergarten to 12th grade in all 50 states and in 59 foreign countries, mostly homeschools for Americans based overseas, such as military personnel, diplomats, missionaries, and so on. But in some instances, on campuses in Japan, Suriname, and in Russia. The current Russian, former Soviet ambassador to Suriname, enrolled his daughter in the Christian Liberty Academy of Parambario, the capital, in the late 1980s. On one occasion, when the ambassador was called to Moscow, his daughter, who had by then completed second grade, was interviewed by Soviet authorities, who, as recalled by Reverend Lindstrom, brought up some matters that were very evolutionary in nature, and she told them, "No, that's not correct. God made everything." So the handlers of the children, I guess, were taken aback by that and wondered, well, where in the world is this girl going to school? But the father got a kick out of it, and he would tell the story and then he'd laugh. He was so proud of his daughter, he was not upset in any way, in any shape or form, that she challenged the educational masters back here in Moscow who were quizzing her. He thought it was just great. Staff personnel from other embassies, including that of Red China, also send their children to the Paramaribo school, where enrollment now exceeds 300. Indeed, Reverend Lindstrom says that the embassy of one Asian country has designated the school as the school of choice for many of their embassy personnel and are interested in being educated in the English language. In Russia, Reverend Lindstrom has worked with former Soviet dissidents to establish 6 on-campus schools to date. And Lindstrom's experience clearly confirms the worldwide nature of the private and homeschool phenomenon. Here are some statistics. Brian D. Ray, a Ph.D., is an associate professor of science and education at Western Baptist College in Salem, Oregon. He also heads the National Home Education Research Institute, which, as the name implies, specializes in the collection, analysis, and reporting of statistical data relating to homeschooling. Such data are used to help initiate legislation related to homeschooling and family issues and to bolster the position of homeschoolers who become involved in court cases. The Institute also publishes the quarterly journal Homeschool Researcher to keep subscribers abreast of the ever-growing body of research in the area of home education. Dr. Ray, who is a father of six children, pegs homeschool enrollment at between 450 and 820,000 nationally as of 1994, indicating an increase in recent years of between 20 and 40% annually. By 2005, the number is now 2 to 3 million nationally enrolled in homeschools. A nationwide study which he conducted of 1,516 families found that home-educated students were scoring on average above the 80th percentile in all areas of standardized achievement tests compared to a national average at the public school level of the 50th percentile. Other studies have found that home educators are adequately addressing the socialization needs of their children, that the children have significantly lower problems with behavior scores than their government school peers, and that happily home educators and their families do not in general have a strong desire for access to tax-funded resources. Now, there are many unsung heroes. Some of the most important sources of information regarding education-related issues are the books and other research materials compiled by largely unheralded individuals who stumble across or otherwise become interested in a topic and then investigate largely on their own. For example, Pennsylvania mother and homemaker Anita Hoag has become one of the country's best-informed activists on education issues as a result of an ongoing investigation triggered in 1981 when her children began showing signs of emotional distress after being subjected to privacy-invading school questionnaires, death education conditioning, and other traumatic happenings in the public school system. The remarkable story of Mrs. Hoag's subsequent probe was recounted in the 1991 book Education for the New World Order by Beverly Ekman. In her own recent book, The New Managed Economy, School of Tomorrow, and in an audio tape of one of her speeches, accompanied by printed documentation supporting her allegations entitled Talking Papers, Mrs. Hoag sheds additional light on such concerns as outcome-based education, called OBE, and the drive to redefine the term family, and the carefully orchestrated process of creating human capital, intellectually hamstrung and subservient workers conditioned to do the bidding of supposed superiors, and plans to collect, computerize, and then centralize the most minute and intimate details about every American from cradle to the grave. Dennis L. Cuddy, Ph.D., has been a government school and university teacher and from 1982 to 88 served as a senior associate with the U.S. Department of Education. Dr. Cuddy appears frequently as a guest columnist in USA Today and is author of two books relating to education. The Grab for Power, a chronology of the National Education Association, which takes the reader through the history and influence of the nation's largest teachers' union, and A Chronology of Education with quotable quotes with excerpts and speeches and writings of key insiders of the humanist education establishment. From 1981 to 1983, Charlotte Isherby was a special assistant in the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Educational Research and Improvement. Her 1985 book, Back to Basics Reform or Skinnerian International Curriculum, was among the first to expose the dangers of this new outbased education, OBE, and to provide convincing evidence that federal and state governments, in collusion with social engineers and the major tax-exempt foundations, were scheming to manipulate and control Americans from birth to death using the educational system as the primary vehicle for bringing about planned social, political, and economic change. This important book was reprinted last year. Mrs. Isherby has also compiled a weighty research package, which she refers to as her 3D proof package entitled Deliberate Dumb Down, and it contains the extensive documentation which she has compiled about outcome-based education over the years. I might point out that this article came from The New American of August 8, 1994. I imagine you can still subscribe to The New American. I received a copy here just the other day. I saw it come across my desk. Yeah, here it is, The New American, printed in the USA. The New American is published biweekly by the American Opinion Publishing Incorporated at 770 West Hill Boulevard, Appleton, Wisconsin, 54914. They had a phone number, 414-749-3784. Rates are $39 a year. Could be more than that now. Let's see what else we've got here. They've got another address here at 300 North Zeeb Road, Ann Arbor, Michigan, 48106. Phone number is 800-521-0600. Again, that's 800-521-0600. Now, this article is pretty old. I put it in my education file some years back. I've been using it from time to time. I recommend it very highly. You could maybe get a reprint of it. It's called The New American, Volume 10, Number 16, August 8, 1994, What Went Wrong? Every year our public schools turn out millions of young adults unprepared for the task of living responsibly in a free society. And the most alarming news is it was planned that way. I did a series here on Charlotte Isherby's book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. Just go to our archive and look for The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. I did it here in 2005. Hey, I got to take a break here and give you a couple of reminders. Number one is you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. Remember, the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review, nor do these publications necessarily endorse the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at area code 417-273-4967. Now, I just plugged the New American magazine. Let me give you that number again, that article that we're covering on today's program, which was entitled The Right Stuff. The Right Stuff. The author of that article, I'm going to give him credit for it, is Robert W. Lee. He wrote the article. Now, in the article, there are some home education resources that were cited in this article, and all of them with the names and addresses are contained here in the article. If you would like this information, send a stamped self-addressed envelope citing The Right Stuff, some educational resources, and I'll photocopy that and put it in your envelope and send it back to you. How's that? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 sources here, including Charlotte Isherby, Dennis Cuddy's book, Christian Liberty Academy, Mary Pride's Big Book Series, Alpha Omega Publications, and so on. If you'd like to open up your own home school and you need a little help along that line, I just called the law school and let's see if we can help you. Now, here's another little factor in here that I think that we should be aware of, and that is, hey, teacher, leave those kids alone. You know, one of the major world arenas in which Hegelian philosophy and the materialistic anti-psychology of want has been applied is to the education system. And in 1819 in Prussia, the first compulsory schooling for children was instituted in our modern era. According to educator John Taylor Gatto, society in Prussia was divided into children who will become policymakers, children who will become assistants to policymakers, those are the engineers, architects, lawyers, and doctors, and then the children who will be the vast, massed workers used in the industrial machine. Prussia sets up a three-tier school system in which one-half of 1% of the population is taught to think. The other 99.5% are not taught to think. They go to school called Akademie. 5.5% of the population go to real schooling, where they partially learn to think, but not completely. Because Russia believed, or Prussia, I should say, that's P-R-U-S-S-I-A, that's Prussia, believed their defeat at the hands of Napoleon was caused by people thinking for themselves at times of stress on the battlefield. Now, they were going to see to it that scientifically this could not happen again. So the lowest 94% went to Volksschulen, where they were to learn harmony, obedience, freedom from stressful thinking, and how to follow instruction. They worked out a system that would in fact guarantee just such a result. And in the Volksschulen, it was to divide whole ideas, which really simultaneously participate in math, science, social thinking, language, and art. They divided them into subjects which hardly had existed before, to divide the subjects further into units, to subdivide the time into small enough units of time, with enough variations in the course of a day, no one would know what was going on. This began the deliberate dumbing down of children in statist schools. In the middle of the last century, a member of the Secret Skull and Bones Society in the United States, following in the Prussian tradition, set in motion an American educational revolution that has subverted the entire system toward the goals of the New World Order. It should be noted here that President George Bush is a member of Skull and Bones, as was John Kerry, the Democratic candidate for president in 2004. The real brains behind this transition was Daniel Coit Gilman. Gilman was the first president of Johns Hopkins University and of the Carnegie Institution. Gilman studied Hegelian philosophy at the University of Berlin in 1854 and 55, and also at the University of Berlin during this time was the earlier mentioned William Wundt, who was a key in applying this Hegelian-styled psychology to the world. Gilman came from a family of skull and bonesmen, and after he returned from Germany in 1856, he became treasurer of Skull and Bones. Simultaneously, Gilman became assistant librarian at Yale and was appointed to the position of head librarian 2 years later. During the same period, Skull and Bones covertly took over the administration of Yale University, with the presidency of the school from that period forward turned over to a succession of Illuminized Skull and Bonesmen, according to Iconoclast, published in October of 1873. They have obtained control of Yale University. Its business is performed by them. Money paid to the university must pass into their hands and be subject to their will. No doubt they are worthy men in themselves, but the many whom they looked down upon while in college cannot so far forget as to give money freely into their hands. Men in Wall Street complain that the college comes straight to them for help instead of asking each graduate for his share. Now, the reason is found in a remark made by one of Yale's and one of America's first men. Few will give but bonesmen, and they care far more for their society than they do for the college. The Woolsey Fund has but a struggling existence for kindred reasons. Here then appears the true reason for Yale's poverty. She is controlled by a few men who shut themselves off from others and assume to be their superiors. Gilman met with Frederick T. Gates. Gates ran Rockefeller's foundations, and he implored him to set up the Southern Educational Board, merging the Slatter and Peabody funds. Gilman called the foundation the General Education Board, signaling his intentions. The organization was later renamed the Rockefeller Foundation. Gilman was the first president of Johns Hopkins University, and he carefully chose for the faculty members from the Skull and Bones and other groups of the Hegelian stripe. Among those was G. Stanley Hall, the first of once American students to make a mark. Hall's training in Leipzig was paid for by Sloan from a member of Scroll and Key, a sister society to Skull and Bones at Yale. In Leipzig, Hall immersed himself in Hegelian-inspired psychological studies taught by materialist psychologists like Hartmann, Helmholtz, and his greatest influence, Wundt. Returning to America in 1883, he took over the psychological laboratory at the new Johns Hopkins and started the American Psychological Association and the American Journal of Psychology. And according to Hall, the psychology that I taught was almost entirely experimental and covered for the most part the material that Wundt had set forth in the latter and larger edition of Psychological Psychology. In 1889, Hall was chosen as the first president of the newly established Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. Hall was the mentor of one of the most influential names in American education in this century, his name, John Dewey. Dewey studied under Hall at Johns Hopkins, moving on to teach at the universities of Michigan and Minnesota. Another major influence upon Dewey was the Hegelian philosopher George Sylvester Morris, who had received his doctorate from the University of Berlin. According to Dewey, echoing the sentiments of his Prussian mentors, there is no God, there is no soul, there are no needs for the props of traditional religion. With dogma and creed excluded, then immutable truth is also dead and buried. There is no room for fixed natural law or permanent moral absolutes. The state public education system is based upon humanism and communism. It teaches socialism, and it's designed to create the perfect socialist man to fit into the perfect new world order. Have you ever wondered why it was that Aunt Bessie and Grandma seemed to be able to write and seemed to be able to function better than we do today? Well, I have here in front of me an eighth grade test from 1895. Now, sharpen your pencils, boys and girls, and let me ask you these questions on this eighth grade test. Now, most of you listening to me today have college degrees and letters after your names. Remember that in order to graduate from the eighth grade in 1895 in Kansas, you would have to pass this test with at least a 70% passing grade. That's D minus, 70%. Could you have passed the 8th grade in 1895? Remember when grandparents and great-grandparents stated that they only had an 8th grade education? Well, check this out. This is the 8th grade final exam from 1895 in Salina, Kansas. It was taken from the original document on file in the Smoky Valley Genealogical Society and Library in Salina, Kansas, and it is reprinted by the Salina Journal. 8th grade. Final exam, Salina, Kansas, 1895. 7, 8, 9, here's 10 questions on grammar. Are you ready, boys and girls? Here it comes. Grammar, time, 1 hour. 1 hour, 10 questions, 6 minutes each. Number one, give 9 rules for the use of capital letters. Question number one, give 9 rules for the use of capital letters. Number two, name the parts of speech and define those that have no modifications. Question two, name the parts of speech and define those parts of speech that have no modifications. Question three, define verse, stanza, and paragraph. Question number three, define verse, stanza, and paragraph. Number four, what are the principal parts of a verb? Give principal parts of lie, play, and run. Question four, what are the principal parts of a verb? Give the principal parts of lie, play, and run. Question number five. Define case and illustrate each case. Five. Define case and then illustrate each case. Six. What is punctuation? And then give the rules for principal marks of punctuation. Question 6. What is punctuation? And then give rules for the principal marks of punctuation. Questions 7 through 10 ask you to write a composition of about 150 words and show therein that you understand the practical use of the rules of grammar. Questions 7 through 10. Write a composition of about 150 words. And then show in that composition that you understand the practical use of the rules of grammar. Those are the 10 questions on grammar. You have 1 hour. U.S. history. Time, 45 minutes. 8 questions on U.S. history. 45 minutes. Question number one in U.S. history. Give the epochs into which U.S. history is divided. Question one. Give the epochs into which U.S. history is divided. Question two. Give an account of the discovery of America by Columbus. Question two. Give an account of the discovery of America by Columbus. Question three. Relate the causes and results of the Revolutionary War. Question three. Relate the causes and the results of the Revolutionary War. Question four. Show the territorial growth of the United States. Question four. Show the territorial growth of the United States. Question five. Tell what you can of the history of Kansas. Question five. Tell what you can of the history of Kansas. Question six. Describe three of the most prominent battles of the rebellion. Question six. Describe three of the most prominent battles of the rebellion. Question seven. Who were the following? Morris, Whitney, Fulton, Bell, Lincoln, Penn, and Howe. Question seven. Who were the following? Morris, Whitney, Fulton, Bell, Lincoln, Penn, and Howe. H-O-W-E. Finally, question eight. Name the events connected with the following dates. 1607, 1620, 1800, 1849, and 1865. Question 8. Name the events connected with the following dates. 1607, 1620, 1800, 1849, and 1865. That's the history exam, 8th grade, Salina, Kansas, 1895. Now let's take a look at geography. Geography. Time, 1 hour. Question 1. 10 questions. 1 hour. 6 minutes each. Question 1. What is climate? And upon what does climate depend? Question 1. What is climate? And upon what does climate depend? Question 2. How do you account for the extremes of climate in Kansas? Question 2. How do you account for the extremes of climate in Kansas? Question 3. Of what use are rivers? And of what use is the ocean? Question 3. Of what use are rivers, and of what use is the ocean? Question 4. Describe the mountains of North America. Question 4. Describe the mountains of North America. Question 5. Name and describe the following. Monrovia, Odessa, Denver, Manitoba, Hecla, Yukon, St. Helena, Juan Fernandez, Aspinwall, and Orinoco. Question number 5. This is a geography test. 1895, Salina, Kansas, 8th grade. Question 5. Name and describe the following. Monrovia, Odessa, Denver, Manitoba, Hecla, Yukon, St. Helena, Juan Fernandez, Aspinwall, and Orinoco. Question 6. Name and locate the principal trade centers of the United States. Question 6. Name and locate the principal trade centers of the United States. Question 7. Name all of the republics of Europe and give the capital of each. Question 7. Name all of the republics of Europe and give the capital of each. Question 8. Why is the Atlantic coast colder than the Pacific in the same latitude? Question 8. Why is the Atlantic coast colder than the Pacific in the same latitude? Question 9. Describe the process by which the water of the ocean returns to the sources of rivers. Question 9. Describe the process by which the water of the ocean returns to the sources of rivers. Question 10. Describe the movements of the earth and give the inclination of the earth. Question 10. Describe the movements of the earth and give the inclination of the earth. That's the 10 questions of the geography section of the test. Now there's an orthography section and a mathematics section. So there was grammar, math, history, orthography, and geography. Notice that the exam took 6 hours to complete. It gives the saying, he only had an eighth grade education, a whole new meaning, doesn't it? My grandfather only had a sixth grade education. My grandmother had an eighth grade education. Next time, I'm going to show you something about literacy and illiteracy in the United States. I think you'll be surprised. I think you'll be shocked. You should be outraged. You should be embarrassed at the literacy rates in the United States compared to 1776, 1787, 1800, 1850, and 1900. That's on the next program on the Law Hour. Let me give you a couple of questions from orthography. When I looked at the word orthography, I didn't even know what it meant. Time, 1 hour. What is this, anyhow, is the question. Question 1. What is meant by the following? Alphabet, phonetic, orthography, etymology, syllabication. Question 1. In the orthography section, question 1. What is meant by the following? Alphabet, phonetic, orthography, etymology, syllabication. Number 2. What are elementary sounds and how are they classified? Number 2. What are elementary sounds and how are they classified? Hey, are you starting to wonder why Johnny can't read and why look and say reading methods don't work and why phonics is so essential to learning how to read? Phonics, a wild new expression of English grammar. Phonics. Question 3. What are the following, and give examples of each? A trigraph, subvocals, diphthong, cognate letters, linguals. Have you ever heard these words before? What are the following, and give some examples of each? Trigraph, subvocals, diphthong, cognate letters, and linguals. Well, I'd never even heard of those words before. Give 4 substitutes for carrot U. Give 4 substitutes for carrot U. That'll give you a whole new meaning for 8th grade education. Well, we're about out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, when we'll be talking about literacy and why it is that Johnny can't read. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.